Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Felitha Williams, your faith-based community nurse, and I hope and pray that things have gone well. Pray that you've had a wonderful Thanksgiving, that you have been stayed safe, healthy, and blessed, and that God has allowed you to see another day. And hope things are going well. And tonight I'm going to get into our lesson. Let me give you my scripture first. 1 Corinthians 12 and 12. And it says, "For as the body is one and hath many members, all the members of the body, of that one body being many, are one body, also is Christ." And talk a little bit tonight. I've had some different questions that have been asked regarding the brain and how it affects different people in their disease process. I just had a my nephew who had a blood infection. The first thing that happened is came confused and delirious and not aware of where he was or what was happening to him, and ultimately was put on the ventilator. And then they checked him daily. So I had to explain all this to my sister that because he wasn't responding. And but then I had explained that we don't, it may be that he's hearing, but he can't respond because of the lack of connection that is necessary between the brain and the other parts of the body. Then he started responding, and I said, well, you know, they got to make sure that's not what we call autonomic, because the body has some responses that it will do and just because it's just an automatic thing. It has nothing to do with brain function or not. It's just built in as a safety mechanism for the body. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the brain tonight and some diseases that does affect the brain. The one thing that we have to understand is that of all the parts of the body, the brain is the most complex. And I used to, when I was working ICU, and I used to tell people, you have to be careful what you say around people, because we really don't know, even in their unconscious state, what they are hearing. And, you know, sometimes people have awakened from being on the vent and being unconscious, and they're able to repeat, if not all, some of the conversation. So I always told them, you know, you just can't say anything because we do not know everything that the brain is doing, even if you're not conscious, because it's a very complex part of the body. It is not a very big organ. It's only about 3 pounds, but it is where it is the seat of intelligence. It's the interpreter of the senses. It's the initiator of body movements, and it controls behavior. The brain does a lot in terms of causing the body to function the way it does. We always refer to the brain as the crown jewel of the human body because it's very important. It controls a whole lot of functions within the body. The brain has three basic units. They have what we call the forebrain, the midbrain, and the hindbrain. And, of course, the hindbrain includes the upper part of the spinal cord, the brain stem, and the cerebellum. And this particular part of the body, part of the brain, controls this particular part of the brain controls life. It controls all of the body's vital function, such as your breathing and heart rate. A lot of times when people's brain stem is damaged, you basically lose your functioning of life itself. And so that's why it's very important that particular part of the brain be protected, because it does control all your vital function. And then you know your vital function is your heart's got to beat and you got to be able to breathe. And that that's what controls that. Now the cerebellum, which is also a part of the hind brain, coordinates movement, and it's involved in learned movements. That when you're playing a piano or hit a tennis ball, you're really activating the cerebellum of the brain. I'm not going to get too technical, but you need to go into what I want to bring. It is you have to understand how the brain functions. And some people will ask, well, this person can't do that, but they can do this. That's because certain parts of the brain are involved with what they can and cannot do. And so when people can't do certain things, it's like they can't speak. Well, that's a certain part of the brain that controls speech, you know. So, and sometimes they can't move. Well, the brain controls certain part of the brain controls movement. So we have to look at that. So the uppermost part of the brain stem, we call that the midbrain, and that controls some of your reflexes and is part of the circuit that controls eye movement and other voluntary movement. The forebrain is probably the largest and most highly developed part of the human brain. And it just consists primarily of the cerebrum and all the structures that, are involved with this. Now, when we talk about the cerebellum, and this is where I want to get to, it is split into two halves. You have a right hemisphere and a left hemisphere. And what happened is these two, they're divided by a deep, we call it fissure, but it's just a deep dividing line of tissue. But they communicate with one another through the nerve fibers, and that enables you to do everything that the cerebellum does, because even though it's two different hemispheres or two different parts, they as long as they're communicating, then you'll be able to do everything that you would normally do, because they're a mirror image of each other. They're just different in their function. But for instance, the ability to form words seems to lie primarily in the left hemisphere. So when you have people that can't form their words, we're looking at the left hemisphere of the cerebellum, which is part of the brain. But then you may have people that they may not be able to, if you have people that can't really control abstract reasoning, if they're not able to do abstract reasoning, that is the right hemisphere of the brain that it is affected. So they're still right there together, but they do have different functions. Now, when we look at the brain, as far as the anatomy of the brain, it is divided into different sections. And this is where we find out, based on the deficit, what part of the brain is affected. Your frontal lobe, which is the front part of the brain, is really the largest lobe of the brain, which is located in the front of the head. And it's primarily involved in your personality characteristics, your decision-making and movement. It also, recognition of smell, usually involves part of the frontal lobe. And another part is that there's an area within the frontal brain that's associated with your ability to speak. And we have what we call the parietal lobe, which is the middle part of the brain, and it helps a person to identify objects and understand spatial relationship. In other words, where one's body is in comparison to an object that's around them. So see, when you have people that have problems with recognizing objects, then we know that is the area that is affected. This lobe also is involved in interpreting pain and touch in the body. So it helps with understanding spoken language. So you understand when you're saying something to people and they can't grasp what you are talking about, this is the part of the brain that is affected. And then we have what we call the occipital lobe, and occipital has to do with eye. So, of course, that is a part of the brain that is involved with vision. And then we have the temporal lobe, which is basically on the sides, and that's involved with your short-term memory. Also is involved with speech, musical rhythm, and to some degree, it involves smell recognition. So as you can see when I'm breaking this down, that different parts of the brain has a function. Some of them overlap with the same function, but so when people are having issues, then you know it's not the whole brain. It's just part of the brain with which there is some kind of issue, you know. And like I said, my nephew, he still has problems with remembering. So he's having, it's affecting his memory of where he was, where he is now, and what happened. And that was due to infection, so it'll hopefully clear up once he better. So now, there are a lot of conditions that are affected by the brain, okay? there a lot of people have certain things going on, and they don't understand, but especially when it comes to the brain, a lot of people don't really think about that. But there are conditions that are affected by the brain. The Parkinson's disease, this is a neurodegenerative disease, affects the nerves in the central brain area. What has happened is the nerves degenerate slowly because the brain stopped producing one of the neurotransmitters, which is dopamine. And so what happens is because the dopamine is not being produced, the nerves slowly begin to degenerate. And so without this, the person cannot control their bodies or their emotions accurately. And so I've seen a lot of commercials, but I also dealt with patients with Parkinson's, where sometimes they can be a little bit testy. But we have to realize that because of this lack of neurotransmitter that is supposed to be there in the brain, sometimes they can't control their emotions and definitely not their body. And that's why you see the movement the way it is. Now, people with Parkinson can live for years, but it does cause problem over a period of time. You know the handshaking, and of course their coordination is off. Sometimes their limbs are stiff, and you know their posture is not stable, and their movements are slow. And of course, there is no treatment, no cure for Parkinson, but there are some medicines they can give you to help you with this movement. And but it's just a disease you're going to live with. It's not something that is curable. One of the most prevalent issues dealing with the brain is dementia and Alzheimer's. They are similar, but they're not the same. Alzheimer's is just a form of dementia. There are a lot of different types of dementia, and Alzheimer's is just one of them, but it just seems it is the most prevalent that we see for the most part. And with dementia, you know, there's a decline in a person's cognitive function. And what this is due to the death or damage or even the malfunction of brain cells that can be brought on by strokes or could be alcohol abuse or could be other conditions. Alzheimer's disease kills and destroys brain cells. They begin to degenerate or to, form abnormal tissue buildup around them. And you've heard them talking about the plaque. This causes progressive memory loss and changes in behavior in their personalities. And again, Alzheimer's patients can get pretty testy sometimes. These conditions could be a combination of genetics, lifestyle, and environment, but right now they don't exactly clearly and specifically know what the causes are. So with that being said, I just went to a Alzheimer's workshop about 2 weeks ago, and they did say that they had some new research. I met one of the guys, one of the physicians, from UAB, who is as University of Alabama here in Birmingham. They do a lot of research. They have a lot of well-renowned doctors, and he is doing a research. They're working on some things. He said it's not, it hasn't been totally completed, but they are seeing some promises of that. But I was very surprised because a lot of things that I have been seeing over and over again is a lot of things that they said at that workshop. Now, before I tell you what they told us, the one thing that he said they have discovered about Alzheimer's is it's linked to cardiovascular disease. And so even with people with high blood pressure, they have linked that, anything that has to do with the heart. And so he said that's why it's important with any cardiovascular disease that whatever the issue is that you work very hard to maintain that disease at a normal state. Not that you don't have it, but that that whatever you're supposed to be doing in terms of medications and therapies and that you continue that. All right? But with that being said, one of the things, and it was, I was real tickled when he told me this. They have found out that there are things that you can do to avoid or even delay Alzheimer's. And the things they talked about is good nutrition, and he drove that home, these things I'm saying, good nutrition, increase activity, adequate rest, and using the mind like puzzles and games and things like that. So I was telling my sister that, so everybody laugh at me because I play like word games on my phone or Candy Crush. Mostly it's just word games and Candy Crush. I have about 3 different word games, but they require you to do different things. And I like to do puzzles. And he said these things can either help, delay, or prevent Alzheimer's. And notice what I said, good nutrition, rest, activity, and, of course, working the brain. You know, and a lot of times, sometimes when people retire, they don't actually work their brain like they should. And it just like, and just sitting in front of TV is not enough. And so I always tease some of the young people here because they're in college and they always needed help with their paper. And I said, you know, my brain's getting older. And they said, well, we're going to keep it young for you. So I do a lot of helping them with their college papers and stuff like that. Anything you can do to keep your brain active, you need to do that. And I was just really, really surprised when he brought that out, and he really reinforced those things. And so we can see that a lot of what happens to our body has to do with the way we treat our body, what we put in our body. And so this was an eye-opener for me, not because I didn't know that was the right thing to do, but wasn't really knowledgeable about that this too can help with the Alzheimer's. The other thing that affects the condition that affects the brain is strokes. And strokes are really medical emergency because they can stop or either interrupt the flow of blood to the brain. And so, you know, you have several types of strokes. You have what we call an ischemic stroke. We have a hemorrhagic stroke. We have a transient ischemic attack. Most of the time, most people know it as a TIA or a mini stroke. And then, of course, we have the brainstem stroke. And then we have a cryptogenic stroke, which we don't know what the cause of that is. Okay, so when we're looking at an ischemic stroke, which is what most people have, it basically is when the blood vessels that supply blood to your brains either get they get blocked a lot of times by a clot. And this is the majority of your stroke. Most of your strokes are ischemic strokes. That's where there's been a block of blood flow to your brain. And like I said, most of the time it is it's a blood clot there, and it prevents blood flow going to the brain. Now, depending on where that is, it depends on how what part of the body is affected by that, okay? And usually when you see these ischemic strokes, and everybody pretty much know them, where you get, you know, sudden numbness or weakness, it can be in your face, because therefore the drooping face, or your arm or your leg, or and often it's just one side of the body, and sometimes you get confused, problems speaking or understanding other, you know, the slurred speech. Most of the time what we see is the arm weakness, face drooping, the slurred speech, but you can have dizziness with loss of balance or coordination, and you can have some, and we do see double vision sometimes, so you can have vision loss or double vision. And a lot of times with these ischemic strokes, a fatty substance, which we call plaque, collects in your arteries, and it causes them to narrow, which we call, you know, atherosclerosis, and it slows down the blood flow, and that plaque breaks off. And then when it breaks off, with any firm foreign body, the blood develops a clot because it's something that's trying to rescue the body. But that clot blocks the artery, and then there you go with the stroke. Now, there are other things that can cause ischemic stroke, but typically it's the break-off of the plaque forming a blood clot. But you can have AFib, or you can have a heart attack. You can have problems with your valve. There could have been injury to a blood vessel in your neck. And for people with blood clotting problems, that can definitely be one of the issues. And so there, even with ischemic stroke, there are two types. You have thrombotic stroke, and that just means a blood clot that forms in an artery that supplies the blood to your brain is causing the blockage there. But then you have what we call an embolic stroke, and that happens when the clot forms somewhere else in your body but travels through the bloodstream and to the vessels up to your brains. And, of course, if it gets stuck there and stops, it'll stop the flow in blood. Can't talk. Flow of blood. Now, AFib increases the risk of clots forming in the heart that can travel to your brain. That's why when you have people that have AFib or atrial fibrillation, that's why they put them on blood thinners, because they don't want them to develop a clot there. And, of course, with anything, strokes have risk factors. Over 60, high blood pressure, heart disease, high cholesterol, diabetes, irregular heart rate, which is atrial fibrillation, smoking, or even family histories of strokes. So we have, that's why we act, you have to act fast when people are having a stroke, because the more time that is lost, the more damage it does, and it can, the results could be permanent. Right? They could be permanent weakness or numbness or garbled speech. Now, some people, when they have this stroke, initially they do have some weakness or some paralysis. They do have some garbled speech and things like that. And some of you have a hard time understanding. But if they get treatment fast, then a lot of times those things resolve. But sometimes when the treatment isn't what it should have been done as quickly, you have a little bit of residual. Sometimes the residual can be minor. You just have a minor weakness. I have somebody in my church. She still can use her hands and stuff, but she does have some weakness in one of her hands. The other thing is the transient ischemic attack, or what we call a TIA, or a lot of people know it as a mini stroke. And that just means that there's a temporary blockage in the blood flow to the brain. And the symptoms usually just last for a few minutes, or they can go away in up to 24 hours. And basically, it's the same thing. It's more temporary. It's not a clot that stand there. It's just a temporary interruption of the blood flow. But what it can be, though, is a warning sign that you may have an ischemic stroke soon. So you don't want to take any chances. You want to get help right away. The other one, stroke that we have, and this one can be a devastating stroke, and that's a hemorrhagic stroke. And this happens when bleeding in your brain damages the cells. And the risk factors are still basically the same. You know, injury, don't exercise, eating unhealthy, family history, smoking. If you've had a stroke in the past, if you have a bleeding disorder, if you use cocaine, or if you've had an aneurysm, okay? So hemorrhagic strokes can be pretty devastating. Sometimes the results are not positive at all. We have a lady in our church that she had a hemorrhagic stroke, and so she was blind for a while. Of course, speech is still, she couldn't speak, and she had some paralysis on the on one side. And so, with the hemorrhagic strokes, these symptoms are usually gradual over minutes or a few hours. You might have noticed that you got a really bad headache or some confusion. You're throwing up, sensitive light, problems with vision, and passing out. And these type of strokes come with complications like seizures, memory and thinking problems, heart problems, sometimes swallowing and trouble eating and drinking. And there can be permanent neurologic disability. Now, the lady in our church, she can still see, but her vision is not as good as it should be. And she still has some residual paralysis she walks with a limp. She is now able to walk with a quad cane. You know, a lot of times when she comes to church, she comes up the handicap ramp, and then she has to, you know, we always have to help her in and different things. So they can be more debilitating than the other stroke. Now the brainstem stroke, and remember the brainstem is the center of life, and it can affect both sides of the body. And so when that happens, you're left in what we call the locked-in state where you're unable to speak or move below the neck, okay? Hence, a lot of your quads, okay? It's because there's been some effect of the brainstem, and that's why some of them have that respirator. You know, it can be hard to recognize a brainstem stroke. You may have some symptoms like a regular stroke, but a lot of the symptoms are the same. You just don't know. But when you get to the place where you have trouble with your blood pressure and breathing and you can only move your eyes, you know that now this is a brainstem stroke. A lot of the problems are the same, and so it can be very devastating. And with this type of stroke, the brainstem, there is a high risk of death. Okay. The other things we're going to move from strokes now. A lot of you have heard of meningitis. Meningitis, and I saw a lot of it when I was working pediatrics, but it does happen to adults. Meningitis is just an inflammation of the lining around the brain and the spinal cord. It's usually due to an infection. It can be bacteria, it could be viral. The viral is a whole lot easier to manage. Bacteria cause a lot of issues. And so this inflammation around the brain and spinal cord can be deadly if it's not treated. And complications can occur. You can have seizures, brain damage, and hearing loss. And so whenever a kid came in with a high fever, the first thing we did was a spinal tap just to make sure that they didn't have meningitis. Another condition of the brain is encephalitis. And it's different, whereas meningitis is an infection or inflammation of the membrane, encephalitis is an infection or inflammation of the brain itself. The brain tissue becomes inflamed, sometimes because it's trying to fight off a viral infection, or sometimes the immune system will attack the brain tissue by mistake. This condition is acute and requires immediate medical attention. So you have to really, really, with encephalitis, you have to go in. And I mean, when they go in and they hit hard. After some people have fever and headaches, they can also start having symptoms of seizures or loss of consciousness. They can be drowsy and confusion. And this can lead to a coma. So that's why we want to go in and we can go in and hit encephalitis hard and heavy. You can also have a brain abscess. You know, that happens. It can be can happen on a relatively healthy person. It could be because of a weakened immune system that causes a bacterial infection in the brain, and of course, pus and dead cells form, and that's what happens with the abscess. Again, this has to be treated readily. Epilepsy is also a disorder of the brain, so we have, you know, with epilepsy, there's an interruption of the electrical communication between the neurons, which is the brain nerves, and that are in the brain, and this needs to be monitored. I've had patients with epilepsy, and you really have to monitor their seizures and everything. And the patient usually has to be aware of that. It is now they have dogs that are trained to recognize when a person with epilepsy is getting ready to have a seizure, which I think is remarkable. The other thing is a brain tumor, and I know a lot of us are aware of that, and that's just where we have a growth inside the brain. And, of course, the growth can be benign, which means they're not harmful, or they can be cancerous or malignant. Either way, they can cause problems by the pressure that they put on the brain. Tumors grow because there's more and more cells combined in the mass. So, you know, as it gets, as it grows, then you have the risk of seizure, then you got this a risk of disruption of your motor function. Your confusion can grow. So a lot of times they want to go ahead and treat the cancerous tumor and by removing it as much as they can, depending on where it is. Now, treatment is not always required in the case of a benign tumor, but when they are cancerous, they need to go ahead and treat. They need to go ahead and treat that, and so the thing they want to do is get that tumor out. And you have to realize that there are sometimes the tumor can be in an area where they're not able to get the whole tumor out because it's in a part of brain, it's in a part of the brain tissue that they can't do that. And speaking of that, my sister-in-law was shot in the head, the bullet lodged in an area of the brain that they were not able to remove it. So as a result of that, she had epilepsy or seizures, and she also had, she could walk, but she still had mobility problems. She had problems with movement. But they could never get, it had to stay there, and it stayed there until she died because it was in a part of the brain tissue that they could not go in and remove it. And that's what you have to realize, that sometimes things are in the brain, they can remove, but if it's in a certain part of the tissue, they can't remove it. And so that, you know, that's why sometimes people want things done, and that's why sometimes you can't do things when you're dealing with the brain. Like I said, the brain is very complex, very complex. And no matter how you want to do things, sometimes it can't be done. And so that is it for me for the evening. Because I think the more we know about what our body does for us, just going back to that seminar, hopefully we'll be able to take better care of our body. And so that's it for me tonight. If there's no question or comment, I will sign off for tonight. So you all have a good evening.